Welcome to the Good, the Bad, and the Sequel Q&A. My name's Doug. So the next sequel that we're going to be covering is one of the probably highest rated ones we'll ever cover on Rotten Tomatoes, budget-wise, the biggest budget, and just how big the movie was when it came out. I was 19. I remember I would go see these at midnight when they came out. We'd dress like pirates. We'd sneak in rum. Sorry, Mom. We'd do it. We'd be like 18, 19, sneaking rum into the movie theater. It's just what we did when we went and saw the next sequel that we're going to be covering, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Maybe I'll make sure Jamie has some rum so we can really be pirates and really review the movie the way, you know, Disney intended. And for it, I talked with an amazing actor. He plays Pintle in the series. You know him from Seinfeld, his small but memorable part in RoboCop 3, Once Upon a Time, so many other things. Actor Lee Ehrenberg. Lee's story was awesome. What was really cool is I connected with Lee and the strike happened like a week later. But we kept in touch. And then even when the strike was over, I was like, oh, it's over. I reached out to him. He's like, oh, wait another few weeks. Still have to vote on it. I don't want to jinx it. And then we finally connected. Loved it. We covered everything from, you know, his early days, you know, getting into acting at a young age and then connecting with, you know, folks like Tim Robbins, starting a theater troupe, and he had Jack Black in it at one point, John Cusack, like a ton of names, and he auditioned for SNL, which is insane. He was doing, we talked about some of the sketches he did, and they were ones that were so ahead of its time, you know, playing, you know, some amazing characters. And then we talked about, you know, him foraying from that, you know, getting into acting, his early days. I love talking to him about, you know, drumming up some memories of Perfect Strangers, Night Court, which are episodes that I'll put his IMDb in the episode notes. If you've never seen those shows, watch all of them on Night Court and Perfect Strangers. Man, the Night Court, top notch, the two that he's in. And of course, Perfect Strangers, but Night Court, one of the best comedy series of all time. That's enough about Night Court. But yeah, so now I love talking to Lee. We even covered, we talked a few weeks before the Super Bowl, just before the championship games. So, you know, our little, we tried to predict the future. I think I was totally wrong because I wanted Detroit. But Lee's a big Raider fan, so we talked a little bit of football, but mostly acting. Seinfeld audition. Man, just so much to cover from his career. He has just this memorable face, and he's great at conveying emotion, even in our interview. Great guy. So cool. Do me a favor. Before I start the interview, please like, share, subscribe. YouTube, if you YouTube, go subscribe there as well. Though you can watch an unedited version of this interview. So you can hear me flub things up like I do during the intro. Last week's episode, I forgot the name of the movie. Such fun things that are happening when you're getting older. But yeah, so all those things, great. And yeah, so if you like, subscribe, tell your friends, tell your neighbor, tell whoever. That's about it for me. And without further ado, here is actor Lee Ehrenberg. Yeah, Raiders, that's awesome. I'm a Giants fan, so you got my guy. You got Pierce.
Yeah, you got your guy. He's an, you know, he's a, his story is just hits me right in the solar plexus. Compton, he's a LA Raider guy. That's when I got into him too. So I just, you know, the whole vibes of the city growing up in those days, like, you know, it was like the Raiders.
Did you grow up in LA?
Yeah. Well, Santa Monica. So a beach town, but yeah, I'm LA through and through.
So how did it all begin?
You know, I sort of just found my peeps, you know, in school, in like Hebrew school. Like as a little kid, I was always, you know, comfy in front of the crowd, you know, rather play someone else than share the truth about my fucking tortured soul. Yeah. You know how it usually is for the artist. You know what I mean? Yeah, dude, I got real lucky. It was good. I will say this. I'm a big believer in the power of arts in schools and the creative minds of people. And luckily that was a big thing, you know, in my era, good theater program, there were strong music programs. So a lot of artists came out of my high school was Santa Monica High. Like my class dude was, Emilio Estevez was like the, probably the most, famous from my, but Sean Penn a year older, Robert Downey, a couple years younger, Rob Lowe,
wow.
Charlie Sheen a few years later. I mean, Holly Rock. We had an epic group and the musicians. And so, we were fast times at Ridgemont. So anyway, that was my roots. Then UCLA, I joined a theater company or founded one with my buddies, most kind of famously in terms of his early movie stardom, funded it was Tim Robbins.
Oh, no way.
Tim's like my older brother, man. That's awesome. A lot of my success for Tim's belief in me as a young actor, college age. Like we were kind of the jockey clique and we were being taught in theater school that the, you know, go do it. And we just did it. And I mean, Jack Black came out of our group. He's a few years younger than us.
Yeah, but
we started working with Jack like 12.
That's awesome.
And if you know Tenacious D, Cage was like an old roommate of mine.
Really?
And we did shows together.
I was just listening to them last night. Like, I love them. And I'm an accountant, so it's like a really hell time of the year. I work a lot of hours. So I just listen to the music. Mm. I mean, I've loved, ever since they came out, the show on HBO, man, so good.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant dudes. Wow. And, you know, old friends. And, you know, I will say this, a lot of my success in the business is directly related to theater.
Yeah.
You know, starting in the theater, entertaining. Understanding that my job as a storyteller is to entertain the audience, do the best you can, have a good time, you know? And I still definitely feel that about what I do.
Yeah.
When I get a chance to play, it's always play for me, these characters I get to do. There's nothing more exciting than action.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of tightrope. It's a tightrope.
You know? Did you do improv? So, was there improv in your group that you did?
A lot of improv. The gang worked. We worked in whiteface in a Commedia dell'arte style for many years where we would have, before we'd even take the stage, we'd have to have a complete image of the character we were working on that night. And a lot of times we'd take source material and then improv off it.
Nice.
And then the guys that were writers, primarily Tim, Adam Simon, who's a producer, writer, director of many things, Michael Schlitt, all these characters, if they were working on a show, the writers, Robert White, Bob White, they would watch the improvs and they would, in the old days, record it. And then what was good, they kept and worked into the characters. And it was a neat way to work. And we did shows like that for a long time. And a lot of the young Hollywood worked with us along the way. And so it really was do these plays Thursday through Sunday. And that would fuel the early auditions of my career.
Yeah.
The Seinfelds, the Tales from the Crypt, the first few movies. I mean, John Cusack, who I had the privilege of working with for years, him and Tim, they got me hired on Tapeheads, one of my first
oh really
very
that's
first
cool
features. I side card that way, so yeah.
Back in the day, like I've talked to casting directors, like I'm sure there's a lot that you know their names, but this one lady has a very familiar name, Fern Champion. Does that ring a bell at all?
Oh. Legend.
Yeah,
legend.
Yeah. No, that's what I was saying. Like legendary. of all of the names, but she was telling me like back in the day, like what made her different when she was casting for comedy movies. She was like the early person to go to the improv. She'd hit up Mitzi Shore, be like, "Hey, who's the new guy?" That's where she found Spade to put in one of the Police Academy movies. Did you have somebody come out to your theater?
Yeah, casting directors would come usually on Thursday nights.
That's awesome.
You know. My theater group, which was Tim and Johnny Cusack, Carrie Armstrong. So this was 1985 ish.
Wow.
We all got invited to Saturday Night Live to try but John and Tim really didn't want to do it. I don't know what happened. I wasn't ready personally, but I was, what an eye opener, you know?
That's awesome.
It was the year they hired, I think, Kevin Nealon came on that year, maybe even Phil Hartman's first year.
Holy shit. So, do you remember your – yeah. So you did it? You did it in – did you do
I got flown out. I just got flown out and then kind of crashed and burned, you know.
Oh, but that's cool. You actually got to do it there. So that means you made it through the first pass. Because usually they'll set up like – like
casting director saw me on stage. That's what I'm saying to you. This is what – the equivalent of going to the improv.
Yeah.
She came to our little theater in Skid Row, off Skid Row in downtown LA at the time. And the show, I mean, Johnny Cuse was in the show, Carrie, Tim was the director. I played this kind of like Max Enormous, this kind of Trumpian narcissist that puts on like the, I had a celebrity space shuttle. This was, our shit was way ahead. We were lefty, punk rocks, you know, theater, and way ahead of the curve, bro. One of my most famous characters was a like 350-pound Pentecostal preacher, and an evangelist. And we took that show. I did that in New York at the Public. We were in the main festival at Edinburgh, late 80s, you know, and. So that was my roots into it, you know. And
that's rad. You got to audition SNL. That must have been so weird with no audience, right? Because it's just four people with notebooks taking notes.
Yeah, you're on stage there. The cast. It was must have been 20 people watching.
Oh, okay.
I would think. I can't. I mean, it's hard to remember.
Yeah.
It was a bit like, you know, it was. I hadn't done a lot of auditions for anything. You know, I had gotten my equity card and started as a professional on stage. and that audition happened before I even had an agent for theatrical rep. So because of that, Tim connected me to one of his agents, first agents. And that became my rep. I mean, these guys, Tim Robbins really is like, I mean, I owe a lot to Tim being a mensch. You know, helping his friends, you know,
a lot. Because he did Howard by this point, right? He did Howard the Duck already at by 87. Howard the Duck was already out, I would think.
Yes. Howard the Duck, see, he's a few years older. What year was Howard the Duck? 85?
I'm guessing 85. I was born in 86. Usually all the movies that I like are... like my favorite ones are usually like the year I was born, the year before. Yeah, 86 it came out.
Okay, so 86. So that would have been the year after. Yeah, 86, summer of, maybe that's right, spot on actually. So anyway, there was a lot of stuff happening, you know.
Hell yeah, man.
At that time, I want to say I'm 23 years old, 24. Some of my early stuff. Just about to get cracking in the next year or so as a professional. Yeah.
Well, was that always the goal? Was it always TV, film? Because I know some people, it's like theater. It was, because theater is like you get the energy. Like I've only done like improv a few times when I lived out in Portland, but there's like this weird thing. It's almost like everyone's looking at me and you're getting that gratification right away. Like you work on a movie sometimes, you know, you don't know if people are going to like it or you're going to get cut. You know, sometimes your scene gets cut from a movie.
It's out of your control.
Yeah.
A lot of it's out of your control. There's editing, there's camera angles, there's other, you know, star people that are more famous that are going to get, you know, money shots, close ups, what you're bringing to it, what's your part of the story. But growing up in LA, for sure, the movies and TV were always my thing. No question. You know, that's what was my dream. Now, becoming a student of theater and finding my way through the theater, I realized that we are all. You know, on stage, we have way more control as the artist. And so that, and also you get the instant feedback at the end of the night. And there's nothing better, you know, than a chance to do some of all of it in your career, right? The fact is that more people will see like a shitty movie or a bad TV show appearance, you know, than probably all my stage work put together. Even if you're playing big theaters, you know? So just one, you know, Seinfeld was, you know, those guys talk about a great thing I was lucky to be part of, the Seinfeld stuff, that was 40 million viewers a week, and that was the rating of the football game. Buffalo, you know, they were out for 40 million now.
I know.
And that was NBC's the Thursday night number.
Yeah.
So viewership, you know, has changed a lot. Yeah. So, right, 40 million, you'd never pack that
in
the
theater
for your whole career, like no matter how good.
So you said, like, this is right on the brink. So it looked like the first, you had Perfect Strangers, which I watched. It's so fun when I talk to people that were in that era of TV. That era of TV is like,
yeah.
It's never going to be replicated, you know? God, like,
it was fun.
There's just like this weird vibe of it, like that, your Nightcore appearances. But was that the first time you were on set? Was it Perfect Strangers or Cross My Heart? They were both in 87.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, Perfect Strangers was my first television. That was, I shot that in 87, I want to say. And then, but I had done in that January, it's interesting. I was doing theater at the turn of that year at this place called the Mark Taper Forum, which is a big theater in Los Angeles, the Music Center. And it was an 800-seat theater. And so I finished that show. And then pretty short order after that, I got Tapeheads, Cross My Heart, the Universal movie with Marty Short, and this other movie called The Underachievers. I think it came out as Night. Yeah, it's real fun, dude. That was like, I'm the main bad guy. I think I'm married to Barbara Streisand's sister, Eddie Albert. It was like coke-fueled 80s shit, man. That was an eye-opener, man. That movie was an eye-opener, bro. So I did all that at like right at the same time, basically.
Yeah, you're busy.
It was really rad. And got going. And then I landed a couple months after that, the TV stuff, and started doing that, you know, lucky to be typecast, right? The key thing in Hollywood is be typecast, have a type. The casting director, the Fern Champions, if she knew that, you know, sleazy bald guys, I'm going to get a call. Right. And so that's what you want. You just want to get a shot, you know, and then because everybody's good.
Yeah.
That's the thing. A lot of good players. And especially when you're my age now, you know, everybody's a baller. You know, they still wouldn't be in the game.
No, I agree. It's like, so, it's good to be
give respect, take
in some cases. It's like, I've talked to actors that it's like, they always play a lawyer. They always play like a certain thing. And sometimes they're like, but I wish I could play other things, but I'm getting work. So it's like one of those weird things, you know?
But, see, I wish my type was useful. Like, part of the thing is, like, crusty guys with hearts of gold, you know, they're memorable roles, but they're not, you know, they come around once every few years, potentially. And but that's part of the journey, man. I mean, it's like when you're young and sexier or whatever, you know, then I was always the weird, I played a lot of weird boyfriend. I'd be like the shaved head biker boyfriend, or I would put a wig on and did that to audition for
I told you that show. It's a shame. There must be something with whoever owns the rights, because it's not on any streaming. You can't buy it. I watched it looked like somebody ripped a VHS onto YouTube. It was really funny. Like, the humor was like very like Police Academy, not Police Academy, Naked Gun-ish, the comedy, like the fourth wall types of jokes. And
I didn't remember. All I remember really was Davy Jones, getting to hang with Davy Jones on that episode. It was the most, and that I auditioned basically with like a wig. I forget even where maybe from the Actors Guild, to be honest with you. Those are the days of Polaroids. I have this Polaroid book, and I have some good Polaroids from that one.
Just so many cool movies. Even the Meet the Hollowheads. Like, I just talked to the director's son, Rob Berman. I talked to Rob. Yeah.
Oh, Rob.
Which I never knew that their family is like royalty in special effects. Like his Rob's grandfather worked on the Wolfman sequel in the '40s.
Dude, and Barney, I think won a freaking Oscar, dude. Barney, Barney did an Actors Gang with me.
Oh, really?
In some shows, and he did, you know, some of our. So anyway,
everything's connected.
Yeah, it definitely is.
I
mean, in a lot of ways, right? I mean, there's a lot of connections, and it's kind of off the connections that you meet people, and
that's how you get work too. You know, like the casting directors remember you, but then maybe some director would be like, "Hey, we need this guy. I know that he's going to do the job."
100%. You know. Trust me, it's harder now because now it's like who's, you know, there's like all the kind of algorithm to who the value is in the show. So you got to be right for the part. And that's just the attitude the artist needs to take to pursue it. Because, you know, it's like I say, the business isn't always fun of acting because you're not going to win all the time. You know? So sometimes you're not right for the part.
But you got to enjoy it. Like you said, when you have when you're on, you know. Like when you have those opportunities, you just got to say yes.
There's a great saying, and I'm sure you might have heard a version of it from somebody, but they pay you for the waiting.
Yeah.
And the acting you're supposed to do for free.
That sounds good.
Right? So it's good. You have a positive mindset. Like where else would you rather be? You know, sometimes you have to wait to contribute your moment. You're doing it. The crew, it's a team sport. It's one thing I love about, you know, the camaraderie that was on it. When you work on a show for a while, you get to know these people. Maybe like the Pirates crew was the same crew for the 3 years I would be. Same camera guys, same gaffers. You know, you get to be friends with these people outside of it. So that energy, and especially when you're friends with your castmates off screen, it really translates on screen to the chemistry. When you got some dirt on your friends, you just had dinner, broke bread, you know their baby, or you know what I mean?
They had one too many glasses of wine. They told you stories that they shouldn't have. And
I'm sure we're all guilty of that. You know, because it's all good time business. So good energy is key. You know, good energy is a key to surviving as an artist. You know, you have to enjoy the journey, man, because the journey is the destination. And, you know, gratitude, when I started practicing gratitude as a discipline, then I was just more at peace with just the moment to be, because you're always hungry. It's never enough, bro. Acting in, unfortunately, Hollywood, man, it's never enough.
Yeah.
It feels good. It's the neatest thing
it's
ever.
It's addicting. I'm sure it is. You know, when you get offset, you're probably like, great. Hey, when's my next audition? Cause it's like, you're not, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's say this, when it connects with the audience, right? So being at a convention at Dragon Con when your TV show's like a hit, or walking that line, sign it, you know, for all the press at a Pirates premiere at Disneyland. I mean, it's just, you have to enjoy it because it's like, you know, it would be so disrespectful.
Yeah.
Right? To not really just enjoy it. And yeah, I mean, half of life is just showing up with a good attitude, bro. It's a way to win daily for
everybody. When was the first time you got noticed on the street? I'm sure there must have been something in the late 80s or 90s. Somebody said, "Hey, you're the guy from Night Court," or
Tales from the Crypt. Mm-hmm. That was around 1990. I want to say that was I was on a plane flight with my mother to her hometown of Baltimore to go see some relatives that were getting up in age, and accompanying my mom, a whole detail of Secret Service agents wanted my fucking picture on the airplane. It was like the old, there were no digital cameras. It was like, you're on Tales from the Crypt. I was like, yeah, pictures. Yeah. That was the first time I remember that. So that was,
you know, I do admit.
That's pretty awesome. Heady experience.
I do miss like old technology. My wife's a teacher, so she's having the kids like use actual cameras for like an after school club she started.
Yeah. Well, I'll be honest though, I have a new like iPhone, whatever, 15 Pro, and my camera nerd buddy, who's like ultimate camera guy, right? And a cinematographer, he's like, dude, that's what I would have. You know, he goes, that's the best camera. I was like, so it's so shocking. Cause like now I don't think it's stigmatized just to take everything on your iPhone.
And, yeah, no, I know.
Cause it's a high quality.
But back in the day, you had to like almost like point and hopefully in 2 weeks when you develop it, it's a good photo. Because if it doesn't come out good, you're screwed.
We had photo mats, man. Little huts where you'd take your film. Could drop them in, or you hand it to the guy and then they would process it, or you would take it to a, you know, a corner guy who actually, I mean, my brother had a dark room in the closet.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
How about like for like,
I like digital.
Oh yeah. Me too. Cause you could see it right away and you know exactly what it is. So how about like auditioning tips? Because I would say your character, the characters that you play, there's just a way you deliver the lines. Is there a way, is that like something that you just developed from like the theater days when you were doing some of those like outlandish characters, like you said, or?
I mean, I think it's all, I want to say that's a gift.
Yeah.
Like just always. Yeah. I don't know. I don't try to figure that one out necessarily. Yeah. I definitely am I'm in the character. I'm not a methody guy unless I need to be, but it's fun to put on the other character. So I never, my one rule is I make my choices not as me. That's what I would say. Be the character, like whatever that is, you know. You can't really get caught acting these days. I think you could a little. The three camera setup was a little more theatrical. The demands of the acting right now is super hyper real. So you're either the guy or you're not the guy. You have to be real vulnerable. You have to be available. Penetrate the screen, you know, with your energy in some way. Yeah. And have courage, you know, that it takes a lot of courage. I respect other performers and I respect the desire to go for it. It's a scary business, right?
Yeah. So, you never know if it's going to be welcomed. Like, it helps too, like Matthew McConaughey losing all that weight. People are going to be like, yeah, that's a little weird, but people embraced what he did, you know, but it's just, I always think of that, like, especially method people, like what's the deepest method or like research that you did? Obviously when you're in Pirates, it's not like you're talking to, you can't like call up a pirate and see how you do it, but were there any roles like that you ever like did any like deep research at all?
I mean, no.
Yeah.
No. I mean, this is what where I go for my clues. History of the period. Yeah. I like historical stuff. I like looking at paintings of it. I like to see the way they wear their clothes. Obviously there's, you know, different forms of speech when certain, you know, time periods, you can't go like be in a, this is one, there's a famous theater director, Tyrone Guthrie, used to direct plays, a lot of Shakespeare and classics out of this theater in Minneapolis, I want to say. Anyway, there's a quote I said, he goes, he loved directing Shakespeare because the actor can't go and say, step on the gas. You know what I mean? It's just like, you got to be true to the. You got to be true to
the period.
To
it. Yeah,
you can step on. But then you play. I like the play. I like the play. I like the listening and getting, you know, inspired by somebody else's good choices. You know, be generous. It's a generous sport. You know, that's why for improv you're not allowed to say no. You're being generous. Okay, shitty idea, but.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Let's run with it, yeah. You know, instead of, you know.
100%. So what was, obviously this was something, you were going to do no matter what, like this career, but was there like a show or a movie you worked on when you're like, okay, I could really do this for the rest of my life?
Oh, you know, it's funny. No, I mean, I sort of knew from
jump that this is you.
I mean, kind of like once I got going, you know, I mean, I think from the theater, I knew I was capable, probably 18, 19, 20 year old guy, 21, 22, in that range. Self-doubt was for later in life.
I bet you're young yet fearless.
I felt pretty much like it was inevitable to a certain extent. And that was just plain fucking, you know, really cockiness and, you know, that it took, you know, I wanted it so bad too, like admitting and owning and kind of just, I've always owned the desire to to want to work. Yeah.
You're always working ever since 87, every year, there's like a ton of credits every year. You're doing like 10, 11 shows.
Yeah. It slowed down a little bit later. And, you know, the last few, obviously the last couple years were slow, and I had a great, great run there from, with Once Upon a Time really through up until about or something where I got, so there was a lot of good karma used up in all the the times they called grumpy in the lineup, you know. But it only takes one business, right? Your life changes with one phone call, one email. You stay positive. I mean, I live on the beach out in California. Awesome. I get my dog out there. I'm out there 2-3 times taking pictures, enjoying it. Again, when I started practicing the gratitude, instead of being mad at the world like I'm being owed or entitlement, I think it's a natural antidote to any sense of entitlement that you get from the you know, getting a few gigs in this game, you know? So then it makes you hungry, you know, you love it. It's definitely been, man, I've really been lucky too. Way more lucky than good, you know, the key, be more, I'd rather be lucky than good. Yeah.
Were there some moments that were super luck? Like just thinking like Seinfeld, was that just an open casting call and a bunch of people went up for the role of Mike?
And actually, the Seinfeld casting's hilarious because I didn't want to fucking go. Yeah, do you know? And it was a total Seinfeld episode worth of karma.
Really?
To be honest with you. Because, yeah, it was in. I don't. Do you know L.A. at all?
No, I don't know L.A.
So like, there's anyway, Rush Hours is gnarly in L.A.
Yeah, no, I've heard that.
Bad
yeah.
traffic. And I want to say the audition was in the Valley, which is against, you know, you're going with all the heavy traffic at like 5:30 on a Friday. So I had a shit attitude and I didn't even want to go because of the drive. And I literally was just worked myself up into this, like, you know, and then, I walked into that audition and before I could even open my mouth, it was a room of Larry Charles, Jerry, Larry David. I mean, it was a heavy room. I mean, I didn't even know. It became way heavier because this was season 3 when the show meteoric. And I walked in and before I could even say, it was the parking space where I'm fighting with George about going back. This is the karma you learn, right? I didn't want to be there. I mean, I didn't want to do the drive, right? So I kind of had this thing. As soon as I walked in, Larry Charles just goes, "Hold, man, are you the guy from that Tales from the Crypt? And I'm like, yeah. And then for the next 10 minutes, he talks about my Tales from the Crypt.
That's amazing.
And how fucking much he loved it. It was the coolest thing. He set me up. And then as soon as I opened my mouth, I do have parking issues growing up in LA. You know, it's a tough place to park. So I understood the character very well. And I just, you know, it was a yeller and I'm good at the yelly parts. And that was basically the last time I'd take a rush hour audition. I'll drive 4 hours. Yeah. Lesson learned, you know? Lesson learned. And I tell that story to make fun of myself and my entitled, you know, actors.
What is so funny about that show, and I think that's why it's still, not saying the other shows, sitcoms from that time, like, don't hold up, they do. But there were so many real life moments. Like, that's something that anytime you're in a parking lot, you have that same thing. You have the person that pulls up and like they think they're going to back in, and that
it's the brilliance of that observational comedy that Jerry made, and of course Larry David's a genius, and those writers, that crew of, you know, the Greg Daniels scripts and just an epic. If you just look at the who's who, the Carol Leifer and all these amazing writers, television is always about the writing stable. They stir the pot of television because you need 20 good episodes. Yeah. Movies are driven by directors. Directors have the power in the movie, like a general marshaling an army from the, you know, the script, getting that script to the certain spot, getting all the money to get, and you're driving that train as a director. And on stage, that's the actor's medium. You know, as soon as the dress rehearsal's over, the director's on to the next show and the stage manager gives you your notes. You're on your own after opening night. So, for Seinfeld and actually all my, I mean, same with Pirates, great writing. Yeah. Great writing. That's a hallmark of a lot of the stuff that resonates with my audience. And it's one of the things that gives me the buzz about being an actor is to say Mamet, talk like Mamet words, or talk like Shakespeare words, or talk like, you know, Larry David words, you know.
That's what I was asking about the line delivery. Just the way you can make your voice go very high and deep all within like a second, when the Michael Jordan is so phony, and then you're like very calm in a way, but it's high pitched. And then as soon as he doesn't buy it, you the way you yell at Kramer, it's just, that's so good. That show is unbelievable. But no, the audition process, quick story. I'm sure you've worked with, do you know Larry Henkin? And I'm sure you bumped into him one of the days.
Yeah, well, I know who he is.
Okay.
Yeah, for sure.
So I helped him write his memoirs, and his Seinfeld story is like, yours worked out. His worked out too, because he played Kramer in the series. He played Kramer, but his, they made him keep going back like 5 times, and he got to the 6th time, and Larry kept making him slam the door like Kramer does. He said, "Can you come back in and do it again? Can you do it again?" And they go, "Okay, can you wait in the hallway?" And he went out there, and he's like, and he goes to the reception, and he goes, "Who's that fucking bald guy in the back with the glasses?" And the woman goes, "Oh, that's Larry David. He's the creator of the show." And he's like, "Holy shit. Thank God I didn't say anything in the audition."
Was that for to actually be Kramer?
That was
for
to be Kramer
at the start,
within the show. Like when they were doing the pilot, two episodes.
I mean, Jeremy Piven's George in that.
Yeah, I know.
And Elena Stipe. Yeah. Who's Elaine? I went to college. She was at UCLA.
Oh, really? Yeah, I always think about Jeremy Piven looks older in that, just the way his hair and everything, than he even does like now.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they Georged him out.
They Georged him out pretty good.
Yeah.
But man, so like with Pirates, like obviously, like you said, like your career, you're like, yeah, you're always busy. But that is something that is on a different stratosphere. Like to be in a film like that, because I'm sure you worked on some bigger budget movies over the years, but that is like
Waterworld.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Waterworld was big, but I'm part in that one. But nothing like Pirates. I mean, nothing, and especially for me, Pirates the 2 and 3 when I'd already, because the first one, I mean, I think that, you know, the popularity of Pintel and Rigetti like was pretty amazing to get noticed and then upgraded. So that was pretty fucking cool. I admit that. I really got a kick out of that. To get to be on Johnny's team and to get to see him like be the biggest movie star in the world, and to, you know, Keith Richards, and just, you know, I don't know. It was pretty sweet. And it hasn't stopped. I'm a pirate for life. I mean, it was still living the ride. Just proud of how much. And again, that was about the audience loving it.
Yeah.
That was about Jerry Bruckheimer. That was about, you know, Ted and Terry, these writers that have written some of the most incredible characters in Hollywood history, you know, them writing, "Hello, Paul," you know, casting Kira, casting Orlando, getting to work with Jeff Rush. I mean, there was a lot of magical stuff went down, right? So, and then Disney not believing necessarily that they didn't know what Jack Sparrow was all about, you know? Yeah. They bet on Haunted Mansion that year.
Well, yeah.
Right? So that, well, in those days, I think studios killed their own movie because they would have a franchise coming out that would already be at Taco Bell before the movie came out. So you're pitching me a toy, but I don't know these characters. It's kind of an oversell, right?
Yeah.
And with Pirates, we didn't have any toys. We had no merch, right? But what happened was the audience goes, wait a minute. I'm going to go see that again and again. And it was pretty amazing.
It was an experience. Like you said, like the people they cast that were like the up and coming actors, they obviously went on to do a ton of great stuff. You had people that you knew, you had like Jeffrey Rush, and it just visually, it's like a really cool. Now, was that filmed? Did you film that in that big tank in Mexico?
No. We filmed, I mean, the first movie we filmed mostly in Hollywood.
Oh, okay.
Then we were on location in the Caribbean. Master and Commander, the tank in Mexico was taken by Master and Commander when we were shooting the second and third pirate movie.
Because Waterworld was that tank now.
So, no, Waterworld was Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
On the Big Island. And not in a water tank for the most part on the ocean. That's why it was expensive, because there were no computers. I mean, computer, you know, filmmaking changed on the first Pirates. Okay. The skeletal pirate zombies, you know, we were animated, layered film, shot on film. By the time the computer started, that's when ILM got back in the Oscar race. They got back in it. The guys that invented Adobe Photoshop were like the special effects supervisors on the movie, you know? It was kind of that. It was Photoshop effects. But to erase a background was an expensive proposition per shot.
Yeah.
Now,
nothing. Oh, now it's nothing.
You can do it on your iPhone. Right. Right. So your iPhone, this iPhone's more powerful than the stuff they were dealing with 20 years ago by far.
Yeah, dude. Film, to shoot on film back in the day. Yeah, yeah. That's why like Canon Film Group would never go over 90 minutes, because that extra roll you had to buy was, you know, they didn't want to put that in the budget. So yeah, cell phone, got $1,200 cell phone. You can shoot so much. It's crazy.
4K resolution, broadcast quality. Yeah. Yeah.
Insane.
So to be a part of that, to see the success, the artistry, the huge sets. I mean, oh my God, dude. And for being a child of, for lack of a better word, of Hollywood, you know, seeing like growing up with like Marcus Welby, or Turning on the Streets that I drove to school on, or The Rookies, or a lot of TV stuff, you know, all the Rockford Files.
So, that's awesome.
It's pretty
How
cool.
quick did you know that there was going to be a sequel? Because that movie, definitely right away. I don't know if that was one of those word of mouth movies. Was that like not slow, but open and then got bigger and bigger and bigger?
Yeah. It was in the theaters for like 9 months, 10 months, like that. It built by far. I don't know the exact, I'm sure it made more money in its second month than it did in its first kind of thing. It was a rarity. In fact, it led directly to the second Pirates, Dead Man's Chest, was the first movie to be on multiple screens in multiplexes.
Wow.
Because Pirates was 2 hours 30, 2 hours 40, something like that, the first one, costing the theater owners an extra screening because it was longer. You said that about the Cannon.
Yeah.
It's another reason why they orders to get an extra screening in, more butts in the seats for the theater owner. However, the theater owner goes, wait a minute, why do we want to have, you know, in these now, this was when the multiplexes started happening too. So before 2005, three, there would be like one, two, or three screens in a movie theater complex. Maybe four. That was a lot. The 10 to 12 screen concept was later in the 2000s, right? Yeah. And so then they started going, well, we'll put Pirates on six of the screens. Take advantage. So that was, so Dead Man's Chest had, that was one of, was the first that I can remember that they did that with too. So it really responsible for a lot of interesting changes in the game.
It's pretty wild. It's insane. Just to be in,
it was cool to be a part of.
Just to be in a movie that is just, I don't know, like bigger than a movie in a sense. Like I didn't know about like what you just said. I didn't know about any of those, but I just think of a movie like that. It's like, it's up there with the Batmans and like, it's like these rare, like, I don't know. It's cool. I saw them in the movie theater. It was like an experience, you know?
I mean, it's not, I mean, you're a top, whatever, 20 franchise. I mean, I wouldn't say, like, you know, you got so many to choose from, but put us in the top 20 somewhere. Some people might put Harry Potter. Some people might put us number one. Is their fave? I don't know. But, you know, like just to be included on the list of your Star Wars.
It's the best pirate franchise.
By far. Yeah.
Nobody's tried it again, right? Close. Nobody tries to do a pirate like movie. It's has there been a pirate movie since the 2000s?
Not a major studio. There's no.
I guess the Tom Hanks movie, is that a pirate when they took the guys when they took his ship? Is they're pirates? I guess, right?
That was rad.
Yeah,
it was rad. Yeah, that. But that's against. Yeah, I mean, there's been pirates. Talk about history, but ever since man went to sea, for commerce, there's been pirates. Riverboat, Nile, whatever, all the way back. But the golden age of piracy was just a real short time, you know, when after the Spanish Armada was destroyed. And there was like a few year period when there were just free agents robbing everybody. And that was the golden age. Very short.
What a scary time to be like robbed at sea. That's pretty frightening. It's not like you can get out and run. I guess you could swim, but you're not going to swim that fast. At least in a car, I can try to run somewhere.
Well, it still happens. Well, you'll see those videos of those tankers going and the Somali pirates coming and trying to board them. Just like, then this South China Sea. They'll take over your yacht and turn it into a floating casino or whatever. It's a lot of crazy shit. Moroccan pirates, Moroccan straits. Got to be careful out there, man. Got to
be careful on your yachts.
Big world.
So do you have any favorite roles over the year? Obviously, like I'm sure that there's like the pirates and like the bigger movies and projects. Are there any other
ones? I like to say my next.
Your next role. I like
the one I don't know about yet. Always my favorite. Yeah, always my favorite. My next. I mean, dude,
or something different, or something different you have to play. Like, because you said.
I mean, I love the guy I played on Action. Have you ever seen Action?
Oh, that was the one with that one? Jay Mar, Jersey guy, right?
Jay Mar. Yeah. That's Bobby G, he's always, like, I did full frontal male nudity on network TV. That's on my resume.
Really?
First ever. Yeah.
Who did? You did it?
I did it. Yeah. Action, oh, dude. Wow. Seriously, look
at that. I got to check it out. Really? And it was on, huh? That was on UPN, right? Yeah, that was a UPN show or?
It was on
Fox. Okay. Wow, that's pretty wild. How'd they get away with that?
Yeah, but we didn't last. I think we lasted 9 episodes. Because he blocks it. And it was so edgy. Really, truthfully, to be told, we should have been a cable show and we'd probably still be on the air. It was really funny. Buddy Hack. We had a great cast. Ileana Douglas. I
mean, oh, she's great.
It's a pretty good show. But the year before, I think the networks all passed on Sopranos. Right. So Sopranos went to HBO. I think it was like CBS.
Thank God. Could sure you imagine story. That?
I could. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like this, but then they're always a step late. And so then they were looking for edgy. So we ended up on Fox, and then the ownership of Fox switched and they went more family. I forget what the deal was. I don't know. I mean, it was a bit above my pay grade, but that character of Bobby G was a lot of fun to play.
Yeah, check it out. The cast is unbelievable. So, Buddy Hackett, Jack Plotnick's really cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, Jack. I mean, we had it. No, it was definitely one to really investigate. There's a killer guest stars. It was basically the story of Joel Silver.
Okay.
And his adventures in Hollywood. Really? But Jay ended up playing. They originally wanted Oliver Platt to play that part, if I remember correctly. And anyway, I love Jay. I love doing it. He was Uber guy to work with. And yeah, we had a lot of fun. So that show is actually kind of sneaky long. It's a pretty good show. It's sneaky. You go like, wait, I wasn't expecting it to be this good, you know, because it was canceled so fast. A lot of it had to do with it was a Fox show, and it was but it was owned by Columbia TriStar, I want to say. So then it was more expensive for them. It wasn't a Fox produced show. So anyway, there was a lot of interesting stuff. That was a fun one. I like being on Californication a lot.
Oh yeah, that was a good show.
That was a fun one. Star Trek, of course, was always a fun.
Do you go in any Star Trek cons? Like Comic Cons for Star Trek?
I have been to a few. Yeah, I'm real proud to be. Oh, you know, because I appeared on all four of the spinoffs, the old ones. I haven't done the new show, but I did Next Gen, 4 or 5 appearances, Enterprise, Voyager, nice. And Deep Space. I have, you know, I have a fairly good Trek Wiki or whatever.
Their fans are the most dedicated fans. I interviewed an actress. I think she was in one episode, and she's like, "Doug, you wouldn't believe how much fan mail I get." She played like I was in a Green Alien, you know, I was on set for 4 hours. She's like, "You wouldn't believe how many autographs they want," and like going to all these cons. It's truly amazing.
That's one thing. The whole fandom, it started with the Trek fan.
Yeah.
The Trekker. Yeah. Because they were the first show that kind of got, they had their the first fan cons in the early 70s. They were so far ahead of it. Yeah. They're really responsible for a lot of the Comic-Con movement and the whole concept of, you know, fans bringing a show back or that kind of thing. Yeah, the original fans of the show.
It's pretty rad. And the stuff they did on air, you know, like the first interracial kiss. Pretty insane. Yeah. Like how big that show really.
Honestly, I still think Trek, you know, if you look at that, that should be the cabinet. It needs to reflect with the people, the country, the world's a mix. You got Sulu, you got Uhuru, you got aliens, you know. I appreciate it. You know, I do appreciate that world and its inclusivity, you know. It's a great, one of the great things about the Trek franchises that it always maintained, you know, some sort of trying to make peace with the different realms of the universe.
Even one, I think it's the sixth one. It's like Christopher Plummer as one of the bad guys in the makeup. And then you had Red Foreman. I forget his name, but he plays like this. He looks like an alien dogish in a way. Just so cool. Some of the funky things.
Yeah, the Westmores, I mean, who did the makeup on that and led that? That's another legendary family of makeup artists.
And one movie I had to mention to you because I think it's not a good sequel, but I think it's amazing. The people, whoever was the casting director, was like so amazing to put this cast of characters in RoboCop 3. Bradley Whitford, Rip Torn, Stephen Root, you and Jeff Garland, and all the cops are in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I got that because I went to college with the director.
Oh, really? Oh, you went
with Fred Decker.
You went to school with Fred Decker?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. He was at UCLA when I was there.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, you know, his whole thing was like that, too. So he blew up around that same time, too, because he was doing Monster Squad.
Shane Black. Yeah. Shane Black was there with us. The whole, all the PATA guys, all those dudes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we had the Actors Gang, which was my group. Then there was that PATA guy, Shane Black, Fred, Chris Matheson. I mean, there's just a lot of people,
That's cool, man.
A lot of people that turned out to be... Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah, it's wild.
A little bit of a golden age, yeah. You know?
No, I'm not saying you don't get that anymore, but I think now it's more like, not saying anybody can act because it's still a hard thing to do, but there's like opportunities like with the cell phone, anybody can kind of shoot, maybe get out there. But it's just like, there was like this hub. That's good. You go to LA, like back in the day, it was like, who was it? Harrison Ford flipped a coin. And if it was like heads, he was going to go to LA, tails, he was going to go to New York. And then he ended up going to, obviously, LA, and the rest is history. But there's so many people that had to make that choice. Do I want to do theater or do I want to go there? And some people started in New York, like William Sadler, and then got to a point and he was like, yeah, I want to kind of be in movies. And then let's change, you know?
Yeah.
It's different now.
I mean, I was grow up here, but I like to say, man, just growing up here, you're just as far away. You might as well be. You know, unless you have family in the biz, you're not, you know, there's no guarantee, right? There's a lot of nepotism in the game, but the average person, you just get lucky. Somebody sees you at the right time and then you have a right look or.
And then you nail it. You get your opportunity. Luck can only get you so far. Then you nail it.
Yeah, dude, let me tell you something. It's a business where you gotta like nail it every fucking time. That's the deal. Even if you don't get the job, nail the jokes, be funny, you know, every time. A lot of times, I mean, if you're not funny, then they'll rewrite the joke.
Yeah.
Right? Because maybe it's not funny, but your job is, especially like the sitcom or depending, you know, you're either there to set the joke or make the joke.
Yeah.
You know?
Now, one question I always, this has been so much fun. I'm so happy we finally connected, dude, like with the strike and everything. But one thing I always like to ask people, like throughout your career, did you ever like keep mementos? Did you like save scripts, wardrobe, or like?
I got some scripts. I mean, wardrobe, you're not usually allowed to keep unless you're the
or you steal it
and they give it to you because you might. You don't want to just in case they want to you know, you hope they call you back. I'll get like a sword from my pirate movies. I got my axe from Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, that's awesome.
I got a few little things here and there. I don't really want to carry a lot of through life though, you know. You know, the older you get, I think you want to shed. You need less. And especially now with digital, I mean, boxes of some photos, digitize them, you can carry
hell yeah, man.
Thumb drive, you know. So yeah, less is more in terms of that. I have a ring from Pirates, kind of like the class ring we got.
Oh,
I got a couple of my action figures. A modest but very sentimental collection of shit.
An action figure. What was that like? Did they like approach you and be like, "Hey, we need to take these photos for," or they just did it off a photo from set? Or just watching the movie?
Well, you actually get scanned.
Wow.
I mean, for Pirates, that was I did a movie called Warriors of Virtue.
Okay.
So I got my first action figure. This was my first action figure from Warriors of Virtue.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. From this character Mantos. I mean, it was made by a toy guy. I mean, there's a bunch of the pirate ones. I don't know. I give him, I was like not sentimental about that. I let my kid play with them.
That's
him. Cool. All my, so they all had their heads ripped off and
how old your kid?
By the time, you know, well now he's a teenager, but when he was young, yeah. You know, I gave him all my toys.
That must've been cool that like the timing of those, of that movie. Well, he's probably, well, the probably the third one, right? He was probably old enough to.
No, he was born after that. He was actually born in 2000. So right when the third one came out, but, you know, but at that time too, there was a lot of popularity for like, we went on cruises or we got to go to Disney or whatever. So he got some good stuff out of it as a young dude.
Is he,
and then again, when
is he into it?
Time.
Acting?
He's a rocker.
Oh, really?
Man.
Nice.
He's not into it. No, he wants to be a rock star.
Is that his drum? Oh, that's it, him behind you, the drum set? Nice.
Yeah. It's his drums back there and kind of, him and his band. He's got a band to work and he's talented.
That's awesome.
So, but I, you know, I encourage it. I mean, I tell him nothing better you could be in your life. You could be a rock star. Everyone wants to be one. So might as well try, you know,
show him that clip of Sledgehammer and ask him if you could play bass. I think you're holding the bass or guitar.
Yeah, I forget what I was. I didn't know. Totally. I had no idea. Stuff me in some tight pants.
Rock on, Lee. Thanks.
All right,
catch
kiddo.
Your sun at sunset. And, appreciate it, dude.
Yes, bro.
Isn't it wild? Like, I think that's what I love about Hollywood, because it's a career that within the career, people admire other people's jobs. You know, I'm an accountant. I love my job. But I don't know if I'm like, there. It's not like it's out there. I can't be like, oh, man, I really love Bob from Des Moines, Iowa's you know, tax return he prepared for a business. It's just not a thing. But with acting, you know, people can admire your work. And even though that Seinfeld audition, he was in a pissy mood going against, you know, traffic, taking forever to get there. And he walks in and he's like so angry, but boom, I think it was Larry Charles loved his episode of Tales from the Crypt and was asking about that. And boom, right from there, he pretty much got the job. So those are my favorite stories. Audition stories and Pinto, man. What a role, man. The guy is obviously a hard worker. He loves his crap so much. So it's so cool when you see people get rewarded. And he got rewarded, obviously, years before that and all the roles that he was had on different in shows and movies, but to be in a big movie like that was just a super memorable experience. You hear just the way he was talking about it. And then if you're watching the video, if you obviously heard him, he has an action figure, which is pretty neat. I like that. But yeah. So your homework, Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. I didn't check this, but I'm pretty sure it should be on Disney Plus or Hulu. One of those. It's got to be somewhere. If not, it's $4 or $5. Worth it. Awesome movie. I remember seeing it in the movie theater. I don't remember the movie, but I remember loving it. So maybe that was too much rum. Maybe. So don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast. Follow us on all social media at Sequels Only. And don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.
Good night.
Good night, guys.